Hello everyone, welcome to today's lecture about graph coloring, section 9.8. Top there you see the map over Europe. This is a problem that came up in the mid 19th century. Because the question is, how should we make a coloring of these countries in this map, so that if there is two countries with a common border, they should have different colors. Of course, we want to keep them apart. It's so we see the where the boundary, the border between the countries are. Which is the minimum number of colors needed to make a coloring of the map in such a way that countries with a common border have different colors. This can be turned to a coloring of the vertices in a graph. We have spoken a little bit of edge coloring of graphs when we talked about Ramsey theory a little bit in maybe lecture 3 or so, but in this lecture it's only about vertex coloring of the vertices. And from this European map I have constructed, took me some time, the so-called dual graph you see there, each vertex corresponds to a country, and there is an edge between two vertices if they have a common border. And up to the left there you see some isolated vertices, and that's Iceland and Faroe Islands. And I have only connected if they have a border at a land border, not sea border. And UK is connected to Ireland with Northern Ireland, so there is also one component. And then we have the big rest of Europe, and I have put some labels on some vertices there to orientation. Sweden is in a triangle there with Finland and Norway. Russia is connected to both Finland and Norway and a lot of other countries. Poland has a P, stands for Poland. Germany there, G, and Hungary and France. And I have neglected the very small places like Andorra, Monaco, Liechtenstein, and so on. And the map is a little bit old, I think, because Yugoslavia is not divided into Serbia and Montenegro. Okay, anyhow, the dual graph. And so instead of coloring the map, we can color the vertices of the graph. And the definition of a coloring here comes at the bottom of page 1. A coloring of a simple graph, that means no multigraph, is the assignment of a color to each vertex of the graph so that no two adjacent vertices are assigned the same color. Adjacent vertices, then they have an edge in common. And for the map here, the dual graph is of course planar. We will come back to these matters at the end of this lecture and give you some proofs there for this coloring of planar graphs. But we go on more, with some general concepts here about coloring. Page
2.
Another word that appears in this context is the chromatic number for a graph. Is the minimum number of colors needed for such a coloring. It is denoted G of G. And if you try to do this coloring of the Europe graph, it should succeed with 4, I think. But 3 is not enough. Let's take some of these standard familiar graphs and have a look at the chromatic number. If we have a bipartite graph, then we know that's the definition really of a bipartite graph. Then it works with 2 colors, say red and blue. So the chromatic number is 2. I give as an illustration there, K22. A path graph that is a path only, it's also bipartite, so we can take red, blue, and so I show P3 as it's called, path with 3 edges. Chromatic number is 2. Cycles we can go on with. Shortest cycle is the triangle C3, and that is also K3, and complete graph with 3 vertices, and we understand that we have to, we can start with red and blue, but we have to use a new color, say green, for the last vertex, since it's connected with both of the other ones. So there, for a triangle and for any cycle with odd number of vertices, we need 3 colors to do a coloring. Sometimes we say proper coloring to state that really there is the issue here is that vertices with the edge in common should have different colors. But for cycles with even number of vertices, we need only 2 colors. Red, blue, and so we can continue if there is an even number of vertices. The complete graphs, KN, well, everyone is connected to everyone else. So we have to pick up a new color for each new vertex. I can start with red, go on with blue. We have a triangle there, so there's the green one. But for the fourth corner there, I have to pick up a new color, say yellow. So there the chromatic number is N for KN. And the wheels, we have a center that is connected to everyone else, and then we have a subgraph, a cycle outside. And we understood the cycle, we can understand now that the wheel chromatic number for wheels are 4 or 3, depending on if it's even or odd number of vertices. So these are the standard graphs. It's not so hard to realize to pick up the chromatic number for them. I turn page to page 3, and there we take a little bit more complicated example. We take a graph with 6 vertices, and the question is, which is the chromatic chromatic number for this graph G? Yeah, have a look at it. What do you see? I see a lot of triangles there. One, first the inner ones there in the rectangle, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 triangles, and then I see a triangle outside the rectangle, this with a curved arc there. One side is a curved arc. This is also a triangle. So then we can say that since there are so many triangles, what can we say then, that what's the minimum number of colors needed? The chromatic number must be greater or equal to 3. That's for sure, since there are triangles there. So then we could try with 3 colors. Red, blue, green. I have 3 choice there in the beginning, but maybe you can now finish and see if it really works with 3 colors. I think we should really avoid to introduce new colors. Can we do this coloring with only 3 colors? If so, then the chromatic number is 3. Try it. I go on with something that is not in the book, but I think I should mention it at least, and it's just a combinatorial thing. We have talked about counting techniques, and we can just say a little bit of the so-called chromatic polynomial, P of G and X. Equal to the number of ways to color the graph with X colors. We have a lot of colors available, and say X then, an integer, and we take the triangle there, and in how many ways can I make a coloring of it if I have X colors available? Well, we can start with the upper vertex, and I'm free to use any of the X ones. But then I go down to the lower left, and I can't use one of the colors. I have only X minus 1 left. And last one, I have X minus 2 choices. So this is really the multiplication principle I use here, and repetitions are not allowed. So it will be X times X minus 1 times X minus 2. And you see that this polynomial is 0 for 1 and 2, and it's 6 for 3. So this polynomial is always 0 when X is smaller than the chromatic number. A little bit more tricky if we want to do the same thing for the square. Proper coloring. 4 vertices, 1, 2, 3, 4. How is the chromatic polynomial looking like? Now it's we have to use the addition principle, not the multiplication principle, but we have 2 separate events here. You see, it's a little bit easy to miss this, but say I do a coloring of vertices. I start with vertex 1 and 3. I'm allowed to use the same color for 1 and 3, but I don't have to. But there is a difference. If I do the same coloring of 1 and 3, then I have x minus 1 choices for both 2 and 4. But if I use different colors for 1 and 3, then I'm a little bit more restricted, because then I have only x minus 2 choices for 2 and 4. So my polynomial here is a sum of two polynomials. I split it up in one polynomial where I use same color for 1 and 3. I denote it with a superscript there, 1 equals 3, and the other one polynomial is 4 for 4 when I take different colors on 1 and 3. And if there are the same colors, then I have x choices for 1 and 3, and x minus 1 for 2, and x minus 1 for 4. And as you see there, I put, if they have different colors, 1 and 3, I have x choices for 1, x minus 1 choices for 3. And then I x minus 2 choices for each of the 2 and 4. So, and I put these things together, I get a fourth order polynomial. And you can maybe think of now that if I have x 4 vertices, my polynomial will be of degree 4. No constant term, of course, because I can't use zero colors to color it. And even more, we see that the sum of the coefficients in this polynomial is also zero. I can't use one color. That's impossible. I can't even do... Well, yes, sorry. I can do it with two colors, it's possible. The polynomial x equal to 2 is 2. I can take red on one diagonal and blue on the other, or vice versa. Two choices. And the polynomial for value for the 3 colors is 18. And maybe you can check by hand all these different colorings of these square. This is, as I said, it's not in the book, but I think it's a nice application of combinatorics for this coloring. In how many ways can I do a coloring with X colors? Yeah, if for larger graphs, we have, of course, to do this on a machine, and there are algorithms for this, but this is such this tricky, time-consuming case, and the algorithms are of exponential time complexity for finding the chromatic number for a graph. Yep, I turn page to page 4, and there is another example of keeping things apart. We want to keep countries with a common border apart, but there are a lot of other things we want to keep apart. And then it comes this with coloring can be useful. Here is an example from the book, and it's from the university world. We have at some before summer break, there are a lot of exams in mathematics denoted with M and the code for the course, and there are also some computer science causes, four of them too, denoted with C, S and code. So there are 8 exams in total there, one vertex for each exam. And some courses have students in common, like M115 and CS101 to the very left there. There are students that will make both exams on both these courses. Then we put an edge between them. And then we go on and check if there are these courses that have students in common, and if so, there will be an edge. And there are a lot of edges, but not between all courses. I think for instance, M195 is only connected to 2 of the computer science courses. So now comes the question, how many occasions, how many time slots do we have to use to arrange these exams? The students become of course upset if we put M115 and CS101 on this very same day at the same time. They must be kept apart. So the number of time slots is equal to the chromatic number for this graph. We want to make a coloring of this graph, and then we get the chromatic number, and that tells us how many exams we have to arrange. How many occasions we have to arrange. Can we, by some inspection, it's hard to build up. There are techniques to creating the chromatic polynomial for this graph, but we don't do it in this course, and we can do some observations. For instance, I note that there's this CS group, they are all connected to each other. So this is there is a subgraph here that is K4. So then we can say that the chromatic number must be greater or equal to, remember K4 on the previous page. Inside the M group we see a path, yes. So inside the M group we see only a path, there is a subgraph over the M's there. M185 is connected to all of the CS vertices. That tells us something also. But 15 and 16 are only connected to 3 of the CS vertices. With this information, I think you should be able to come up with a solution to this problem. And it's from the book 9817, so you can try it. I think you should try it yourself. I finish this lecture with coming back to the coloring of this graph, the dual graph we had in on page 1, the Europe graph, and generally some general results for planar graphs. the coloring of planar graphs. People have for a long time expected that there are it's sufficient with four colors for planar graphs, that the chromatic number is at maximum is four for planar graphs. You don't, and after some erroneous proofs in the late 19th century, it was solved in 1976 by a joint effort of man and machine. It was a computer-assisted proof. It has been a lot of discussions about this, but the machine checked around 2000, I think, standard graphs, and checked that it was okay with four colors for them. And then it turns out that then we can be sure that four colors is sufficient, always sufficient for planar graphs. I turn page to page five and do some things, two theorems on this. We can't prove this, that four colors is enough, but we can do five, six and five. And I think they are, I like these proofs. They're a little bit hard sometimes, but I enjoy them very much, and we learn a great deal on the road. On the road to the final proof. So let's go. First theorem. Six colors is enough for a planar graphs. That we can prove. From previous lecture, we know that the number of edges is small or equal to three times the number of vertices minus six. Four planar graphs. That was something that came out when we started to talk about the degree of a region, and we made some estimates. There cannot be too many edges with a fixed number of vertices. There cannot be too many edges for to keep it the graph planar. And here comes something important. If the degree of all vertices is greater or equal to six, then we know from the two times the number of edges is the sum over all the degrees. And then we get that this must be greater or equal to six times the number of vertices. That means that in that case, the number of edges is greater or equal to 3v minus six. Comparing these two inequalities, we can conclude for planar graph, the minimal degree is at most five. Not all of them can be six or higher. Then we get a contradiction if it's planar. There can of course be degree two or three and so, but we can at least state that at the minimal degree of all the going all over the vertices is at most five. And then we take such a vertex, we call it Xn. I have illustrated a part of this graph here in the figure, and I have Xn. And you see it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 neighbors, and I have skipped the rest of the graph, much of the rest. And then I create a subgraph. I call it G minus Xn. I take away X, the vertex Xn, and delete all the edges attached to it. Then I get subgraph Hn minus 1. This is also planar, of course, and have also such a vertex where the minimal degree is at most 5. And then I create a new subgraph HN minus 2 in the same manner. And this HN minus 2 has also such a vertex, call it XN minus 2. And then you see I go on and on and on, and then I get an ordering of my vertices. X1, X2, X3, X4, X5, X6, X7, up to XN. And then one could use a so-called greedy algorithm to make the colorings of this one. We start with X1, say red. If X1 is connected to X2, I have to use a new color, blue. Otherwise, X2 can be red, and so on. In worst case, I have to use new color up to X6. But when I came to vertex 7, the whole construction here is made in such a way that this vertex 7 is connected to at most 5 of the previous 6 ones. That means a color, one of the previous colors, can be reused. So I think this is a nice result. And we that from this we understand that 6 colors is sufficient. Yeah, I know that 4 colors is sufficient, but that's for the computer. We have to be a little bit more modest. But in fact, we can do even the stronger case here. Top of page 6. Chromatic number for a planar graph is smaller or equal to 5, in fact. And I think we can prove it also. And this is a proof by contradiction. And I hope you will see this contradiction. Let G be a 6 chromatic graph, as they say. That means we assume that this planar graph, there is really 6 colors needed. And we take such a graph with minimal number of vertices. Important here with the minimal number of vertices. And so I assume this theorem is wrong, and then we will hope to get a contradiction. Let now X be a vertex of degree at most 5. We have seen from previous discussion here on previous page that these vertices exist. Let's take one of them, and I have drawn here one with 5 neighbors there, and then I do as before. I take a construct a subgraph H that I delete vertex X and the all edges attached to it. Now this, we know that for this H, 5 colors are sufficient, because G was with minimal number of vertices. If I take away one vertex, well, then it should be okay with 5 colors. And then I do a coloring of these neighbors, color 1 to X1, color 2 to X2, color 3 to X3, color 4 to X4, and color 5 to X5, you say. And here comes something more important. These colors must be different. Because if say color for X1 and X4 can be the same, is the same, well, then I can have freedom to put in one, say put 4 on X and 1 on X4. So they must all be different. And now I construct some subgraphs here. I call them HI, J. The graph spanned by colors I and J. This spanned we maybe not have said about, but it's, you can check in section 10.4. That means if I take 1 and 3, it could be red and blue. I take the subgraph made up of the red and blue vertices and the edges attached to them. I forget everything else. That's the meaning of spanned by the colors A, I, and J. Can X1 and X3 belong to distinct components or different components of a H13? I consider now these X1 and X3 and these colors there. The answer comes at the top of page 7. No, since we can then interchange colors 1 and 3 in the X1 component. And then I get one color free to use for vertex X. So there's a contradiction. That means that I conclude that there must be a path from X1 to X3. I show only a part of this graph on page 6, but you see I have drawn a path there. There is color 1, 3, 1, 3, 1, 3, and so from going from X3 to X1. Using the same argument for colors 2 and 4. We understand that there must be a path P24 from X2 to X4. Same argument. And I've shown that on this figure on page 6. And now I think we are ready for the contradiction. This was a proof by contradiction. We assume that there was a graph where six planar graph where six colors were needed, and this we took one with the one with minimal number of vertices in this class, this type, and we hoped for a contradiction, and I think we have found one. Can you see it? Can you see the contradiction? Okay, I've said it before and I say it again. I think this doing proofs in graph theory is very fun and interesting, I think. Okay, bye.